Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
A very enjoyable game. The Yankee Brave 1-0 game from game 5 of the 96
right.
series.
Smoltz and Pettit.
Oh, what a hell of a game that was. And that, of course, is the great Paul O'Neill. Paul, Joe, and Evan, how are you?
Paul, how are you?
You're getting me all fired up for the big game 5 coming up here.
Let me tell you, man, I rewatched that game, and the thing that jumps out at me, first of all, I love 1-0 games. I'm a sucker for that. But that last at bat where John Wetland is facing Luis Polonia, there are guys on base, it's a 1-0 game, and Polonia is fouling off pitch after pitch after pitch after pitch, and then he ropes one to right field, and here comes you running it down, making that hell of a catch. Take us through that at-bat for you standing there in right field and then obviously making the game-saving catch that you did.
Now you're making me nervous, man. You know, the story behind the story, and it's been out, and it's true, is Jose Cardenal, who was our defensive coach, had, like, waved me down a couple pitches before and actually moved me a little deeper towards right center because – Polonia, you're right, was fouling off a lot of pitches, but he was fouling off pitches the other way. So they kind of moved me towards the gap, and obviously that's where the ball was hit. So that's kind of the little story in between it. Mm.
Paul, I want to go back, and we're talking to Paul O'Neill. I want to go back to, because people forget that you were in Cincinnati, you run that championship team with Lou Piniella in 1990 and all that when you guys swept the Oakland A's. But just tell me about the trade. When you found out, and I know you're from Ohio. I think you're from Columbus. I know you're from Ohio, so you played basically in, you know, your hometown team, if you want to call it that, with the Reds. When you were dealt, I think it was for Roberto Kelly, that trade when you knew that you were coming to the Yankees. How about that?
Well, it was strange because, you know, anytime you're traded back there as a young kid, you think, you know, the reason they're trading me is because they don't want me. And it's kind of like, you're not good enough to play here. And then you figure out, okay, where am I going? I didn't know anything about New York other than going to play the Mets and staying on 42nd Street in the Grand Hyatt. That's what I knew about New York. So,
right.
You know, you move into Westchester, you move your family in, and then you understand, you know, the legacy and the tradition of the Yankees. And it just, I remember going to spring training, the first spring training, and seeing the likes of Yogi Berra and Mickey Mantle and Reggie Jackson, it is like, wow, I have gone somewhere else. And it just absolutely blew me away immediately.
And it felt like you became a different hitter. I mean, in 1994, you won the batting title. You had one hell of a year. You became this high average guy. When did that change for you? Maybe a philosophy at the plate, but how did you evolve as a player upon that trade becoming what you became?
Well, you know, I look back at what happened, and with Cincinnati, they wanted me to be this, you know, true power hitter, pull everything, get the ball elevated, kind of like this day and age in baseball, right? And that just was not me. I mean, I was a natural line drive hitter where I was comfortable hitting the ball the other way. And when I went to New York, I literally sat down with Mattingly, one of the first guys I sat, and he said, you know, this is the way you got to hit. And then Wade Boggs came over that same year, and, you know, that's the way he became a Hall of Famer. So it was easier for me to hit that way because it was more natural than me trying to go up there and, you know, spin on balls and try to launch them out of Yankee Stadium.
Could you ever have envisioned what was going to happen? I mean, the kind of team, I mean, you would wind up, you know, you won a championship with the Reds, but you wind up coming through this to the Yankees and playing on one of the all-time great, you know, dynasties that we've ever seen. I mean, you guys wind up winning, you know, you win three in a row, you win four championships, you know, the number of World Series you wound up going to. Could you have ever envisioned that when you wound up coming over to the Yankees?
Not really. I mean, you don't know what to expect. I know that I absolutely had a blast. The first couple of years there with some of the people they had brought in and some of the names that, you know, people don't remember that were a big part of that, you know, Gallego and Mike Stanley and, of course, right, Maddox. Right. You know, and then that run that we had in 95 just to get to the playoffs. I mean, there was a lot of things up and coming, but, you know, Jeter and Mariano and Posada, they weren't there yet. So, you know, we were kind of laying down the footwork, but then when all those pieces fit together, you know, you kind of take it for granted at the time, but you look back and think, you know, what an unbelievable time to be part of that organization.
You know, that series against Seattle in 1995 was one of the great five-game series you'll ever see, the classic Game 5. I remember you were hitting a ton in that series, hit a home run in that Game 5. I look back at that as a fan and say, boy, what a pivotal moment in Yankee history. I'm sure you look back at it and say, man, I wish we won the game. But if you do, maybe everything's different. You know, you guys lose that Game 5. Here comes Joe Torre. There were a lot of offseason changes. Could you have imagined the evolution of the Yankees from that heartbreaking loss in Game 5? You have a 2-0 series lead to what took place, because there were so many changes going into 1996, obviously led by the brand-new manager, Joe Torre.
Yeah, and a lot of times when you're just a step away, you know, you get to the playoffs, you think, you know, we're going to go back at it again, we're going to learn from it. You don't expect a ton of changes. And I can remember that night talking to Buck Showalter and getting the vibe from Buck that he thought he was gone. And it just, to me, was crazy. But, you know, obviously Joe Torre, the perfect guy to bring in hindsight. And then everything seemed to come in place. But, you know, 96, 98, 99, 2000, I really don't think they happen unless, you know, you have a couple years of building before that. And it just was kind of a, like I said, the perfect time to be in New York as a player.
You know, you won all these championships with the Yankees. We're talking to the great Paul O'Neill. Anyone jump, the first one maybe, the moment, you know, or one of the four championships you won here that maybe jumps out more than the other one?
You know, for some reason, the Mets series, just because it was all involved in New York, it just was probably as fun as I've ever had in baseball. And to jump on a bus and drive across town to the game, to not have to travel, you couldn't get – I mean, the whole city was involved, whether you're a Mets fan, Yankee fan, you couldn't get away from it and the excitement of it. And also, it was such a you know, 99, I mean, we won the World Series, and I wasn't able to really enjoy it because I lost my father during the World Series in 99. And I, you know, just like, man, I hope I get back to a World Series. And to get back in 2000 and enjoy that much, that to me was as good as it gets.
Let's be honest. You could have won the MVP of that World Series. I mean, Derek Jeter, you know, fine, give it to him. But not only
Derek Jeter, man.
Listen, I get it. The home run, first pitch, Bobby Jones, the lights are flashing. But I could tell you on the other end of this thing as a fan, you changed the World Series. More so than even Timo Perez and all of that. That at-bat, and sometimes it starts that way. It's that one at-bat in a rally that changes everything. And that, and I remember sitting in the outfield at Yankee Stadium. I knew when you worked that walk against Benitez, I said to myself, oh, the Mets are dead. I mean, they're going to call, you guys are coming back now. Take us through that at bat, because it was a battle between you and Armando, and obviously you won it by drawing a walk.
Yeah, I was talking to Mike Lupica the other day. He was doing an article about that at bat, and it was bringing back the memories where I didn't feel great at the plate going into that series, and I ended up really getting hot towards the end of the series. But I can remember getting behind in the account to Benitez and just thinking to myself, stepping out of the box, I got no chance here. You know, I'm rifling balls over the other dugout, emergency hacks on everything. And, you know, as a player, you realize it's late in the game. If you get on, something might happen. And all of a sudden you foul off a couple pitches, and then, you know, you see 3-2 on the board, and now you got a chance. And it wasn't a chance to get a hit because I felt like I was pretty much overmatched, but it was a chance that, you know, he might throw a ball, which he did. And then, you know, all of a sudden a hit here and a knob block, a sack fly, and, you know, all bets were off. And, you know, when you steal a game in a short series like a World Series, it's very hard for another team to recover. And I don't think the Mets ever recovered after losing Game 1, which they should have won. I mean, your closers
of course
work. It's just we kind of stole a game.
You definitely did. And, of course, you played on one of the great teams, if not the greatest team of all time, the 98 team that won 114 games. I mean, how about that team? It had to be the best team you played on, right, Paul?
No doubt about it. And the way you look at it is, I mean, you can have great teams, but not everybody has great years, or some people get injured or things like that. But that 98 team, it's just like we had great team and everybody had a great year. It's just anything that could possibly happen, happened for the good. I can remember Strawberry pinch hitting grand slams. I can remember just anything that you could possibly think up to win a game. It just kept happening. And I remember going to series after series, you know, you get in a mindset to win 2 out of 3 so often in baseball, it's almost a bad thing. But we used to go in there expecting to sweep series. And it just got to be so normal that, you know, you just continue to do it.
You know, I don't know the reason why I've been focusing on 96, Paul. And obviously you guys aren't Friday night with that game 5, but I've rewatched a lot of that run. And, you know, obviously we have no sports right now, so it's basically watching a lot of old games. And it's amazing how deep you guys were and some of the decisions Joe Torre had to make, including sitting you on the bench, sitting Tino Martinez on the bench. Wade Boggs, a Hall of Famer, is not playing, and Charlie Hayes is at moments during that series. Was that difficult for you as a competitor when, I think it was Game 3 and 4, you don't start. You end up starting Game 5 against John Smoltz, but how about that aspect of it?
Yeah, it was tough. And, you know, just thinking back then, Joe Torre had so many options, and, you know, he had to make decisions, tough decisions. And when you look at, you know, Cecil Fielder got hot, drove in a lot of runs, but in order for him to do that, you got Tino Martinez, who's, you know, one of the, you know, iconic guys for the Yankees, not starting. And Wade Boggs, a Hall of Famer, gets a huge walk in Game 4, but didn't start the game. And Charlie Hayes came in and had, you know, a great year, and defensively he was phenomenal. So there were so many pieces that all of a sudden you get to a point in the season where Joe Torre has to make some decisions, and always they seem like they worked out. And you're right, that I was not even supposed to play in Game 5. I remember being called into the office saying, you know what, we're probably going to go with Tim Raines tonight. And, you know, half an hour later, he said, you know what, you're in right field tonight, because I was a little backed up. But, you know, you look back at those things and it's just you enjoy them now, because you don't have to go out to change anything now.
You know, Paul, a moment I'll always remember for you again when talking to the great Paul O'Neill. I guess it was the 0-1 World Series, and obviously I knew you wound up losing to Arizona, but I guess it was the Game 5 at the stadium, the last game that you played. If I'm not mistaken, it was the last game you played for the Yankees at the stadium, and I remember the crowd in right field chanting your name. I could still see that moment right now. Just give me what that feeling is like, you know, when you hear
it. It really happened, huh? I thought it was kind of a dream, but yeah, you know, that was really an amazing night. And at the time, you know, it kind of got out that hey, this is it. I'm retiring, and I don't know how New York fans they find these things out, and it ended up being that. And all of a sudden, I realized what they were doing. But at the time, we're losing a game, and you know, how do you react to this in the middle of a World Series game? But then the way it ended with, you know, the home runs late, and just those were the three games that I remember of that World Series were those home games, sure. You know, after the 9/11 stuff. And it just was, I don't remember the outcome of that series as much as the other ones. I remember those three games and how important they were at the time to be in New York.
You know, we had your former teammate on, David Wells, the other day, and he said he was going to leave baseball when they grabbed the shirt off his back, which they finally did. I think he was 45, and his career ended. Did you have second thoughts? Because you still were good, you know, in 2001. I mean, you know, you may not be winning a batting title, but you were a pretty productive player in your final year in the major leagues. Was there reluctance to walk away at that point?
I mean, we had kind of made up our mind, we as a family and my wife, and, you know, I had three kids, and you got to remember that, you know, in a baseball player's life, kids are going to three separate schools. They're going to New York, they're being homeschooled in spring training, and then in Cincinnati in the off season, and they had gotten to the age where, you know, it's very difficult. And I was starting to get some injuries that I wasn't, you know, for no reason. But then the next year, you look back, and you know, I remember doing broadcasts, thinking, you know, you could still do this, and that's why kind of the broadcasts were a little different now. Where now you do a broadcast, and you look down there, and you really, I've got no chance of actually even, you know, swinging a bat, making contact. You kind of appreciate the talent of the players today, but I didn't really have a lot of second guesses. I didn't. I felt like I lived out a dream, and it's just. You know, could you hung on? I was a little bullheaded to the point where I still wanted to play every day, and I would have been much better at that point, probably being a platoon player or something like that.
Who was it? We had Carlos Delgado on earlier. I asked him this question, and I'm going to ask you. Who was the toughest pitcher that you went up against, Paul?
That was easy. Randy Johnson, to me, just being a left-hander with his height and the velocity, I couldn't pick up the baseball. And, you know, as weird as that sounds, it's just if you don't see the ball, obviously you can't hit it. And from his release point and from his angle and being a left-hander, it just was something I didn't look forward to.
I can understand. It's funny. Carlos Delgado says Pedro Martinez. Yep. You say Randy Johnson. You pick some pretty good choices
not too bad.
Either of those guys are going to be a tough night, but you know, they're in the Hall of Fame for a reason.
No doubt. Paul, we appreciate you coming on. We'll be watching Game 5 of the 96 yep. World Series on YES Friday night. You'll be tweeting along. Thank you very much for popping on.
Paul, appreciate it, man. Be well. Be safe.
Hope everybody in your circle is healthy and doing well. You take care.
Thank you.
You too. Paul O'Neill.
Paul O'Neill and Paul and John Filippelli, they're both doing the Twitter takeover on Friday night. YES is going to air and live tweet the Game 5 of the 96 World Series game we talked about a couple weeks ago. I rewatched that game. Oh, it's a great game. Tremendous, tremendous game, including some things that you don't see very much anymore. Andy Pettit actually came out to start the ninth inning. He came out, gave up a leadoff double with a 1-0 lead to Chipper Jones, and then eventually Joe Torre goes to John Wetland, who's able to get the big outs, including the final out of the game. I mean, just paint the scenario in your head. First and third, two outs, Yankees up a run, series tied at two. Polonia is fouling off pitch after pitch after pitch, and then he ropes one to right field, and Paul O'Neill makes the running catch to win the game. Just an incredible baseball game, and obviously it was kind of important because it gave the Yankees the 3-2 series lead. Yeah, kind of. And they... Hey, you know what? The way that team was playing, even if they lost that game, they'd probably come back and win 6-7 anyway.
Well, remember Torre said they were going to win after they lost the first two games at home, that they were going to sweep in Atlanta and win in six. Remember Torre made that
he
prediction?
Did. Yes. And he was right.
Of course.
And it certainly didn't look that good, especially in game four when they're down 6-0 to the Atlanta Braves.
Yep.
Incredible series, incredible game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.